Okay.
So we're at day 11.
I had to revise my plans for today a lot. I had to scratch a lot of stuff out. Originally, I thought I was gonna breeze through this stuff, but I need to talk about something called orthogonal bases. So I think last time I put like as one of the items for talking about stuff was orthogonal complements, but we didn't actually get to that. So that we're gonna have to come back to that today. So I think I'll start with stuff that just talks about vectors as opposed to subspaces of vectors. Okay. Then we'll get to the orthogonal complements. You may want to, yeah, grab one of the handouts there. Okay. So, if you've taken Calculus 3, you may have seen these things before. P-R-O-J, it stands for the projection. O-R-T-E-H stands for orthogonal projection. Of course, orthogonal is a fancy word for right angle or perpendicular. Okay. So, for every vector u, let's say we're in n-dimensional Euclidean space, and every non-zero vector in the same Euclidean space, so full 17-dimensional or whatever, okay, you can use v to cut up u into two pieces. One piece is parallel or anti-parallel to V, and the other piece is perpendicular to V. And by cutting up U into two pieces, I just mean that the two pieces add up to U in the vector sense of addition, right? Some abbreviated notation, like this the two lines, they're parallel lines, so that's an abbreviation for parallel, right? And this is perpendicular. Now, in practice, what does this mean? This means that in terms of dot products, this means that if you take A dot V, you get plus or minus the magnitude of A times the magnitude of V. Over here, if you take B dot V, you get zero. In terms of angles, we're saying that the angle between A and V is zero or pi, right? Zero or 180 degrees. Here we're saying the angle between B and V is pi over 2, or 90 degrees. And for the one about parallel or anti-parallel, we're just saying that vector A here is equal to some scalar, I'll call it C times V, for some C, again, just a scalar, just a real number, positive, negative, or zero. Okay, so I claim there's a unique way to cut up any vector U into a part that is parallel or anti-parallel to V, and a part that is perpendicular to V. And geometrically, this is not hard to believe. You can convince yourself of it. Okay? For example, draw two V's like that. It doesn't really matter where you put the V, just put it over here. Okay? So as you can, it doesn't matter where you start the arrow, only the direction and length of the arrow matter as far as vectors go. Okay, so how do we break this up? Okay, so imagine here's a copy of V now. I'm going to have start at the same place as U. Okay, and now we imagine extending it along a line. So you consider all the different multiples of V. And what we want is we want our A to be an arrow along this line. Right? Now we want to make a triangle. A plus V, A plus B equals U. So you can't just pick any A, of course, because you can't just pick any B. You need the B to be perpendicular. So somehow we've got to go from here, we've got to start here, go along this line, and then we need to make a 90-degree turn and get to where U was pointing at. Okay, so we need a 90-degree angle right there. And that's exactly what it takes. Okay, so you can see that geometrically you should believe that at least in two dimensions there is one and only one way to cut up your vector U into a part that is into two parts, a part that is parallel or anti-parallel to V, and a part that's perpendicular. Here's another example. This time I'll have the angle between U and V be obtuse instead of acute. Okay? Okay, let's okay. In this example, imagine extending V along a big line here. Okay. More like that, I guess. Nice. I'll get the meter stick if it's not straight enough. Alright? And so this time, U is going to go along the line this way, right? It's anti-parallel to V. It's pointing in the opposite direction. And of course, we have to make the perpendicular, so I had my green arrow perhaps a little bit too long there. That's right angle. And this works in two dimensions, and it works in higher dimensions, given the way we define perpendicular in terms of dot products, and given the way I'm defining it parallel, anti-parallel, in the sense of the angle, as we define in terms of dot products, either 0 or pi. A direct dot product translation looks like that. This way I really like to think about, right, it's a multiple of V. Right? In fact, this last version of it, you could read it very nicely as just saying A is in the span of the set with just vector V in there, right? Because the span is exactly all the multiples of V. how do you actually find these things? Geometrically, we know what to do. And that motivates the general procedure that makes sense in higher dimensions. There's an angle, right? So the original V here has been obscured, but here it is again. Right? There's an angle between U and V. We're going to call it theta. Okay? So what you have here is actually a big right triangle. Okay? So the idea is figure out A, okay? And after you figure out A, then you can just subtract it from U to get B. Okay? Because we know A plus B is supposed to be U, so take the A off of U and you've got the B. So geometrically, this is a right triangle, so I can figure out the magnitude of A, simple way. It's just going to be the cosine of theta, right, times the magnitude of U. Now that's slightly a lie because the cosine of theta could be negative, right, like over here. So the fix for that is, you can at least say the magnitude of A is the absolute value of the cosine. That's the magnitude of B, right? So just looking at this right triangle here, you'll get the ratio. The cosine is whatever the magnitude of A is supposed to be divided by the magnitude of B. But what about the direction, right? Well, so the direction of A is supposed to be the same as V. Right? So if you forgot about magnitudes, right? Remember this notation, little hat. That's where you're dividing out the magnitude of a vector. So you're just focusing on direction. So if A is supposed to point either the same way as V or the opposite way as V. Okay. And in fact, we can get more precise. It's actually, it points in the same way as V when the angle is less than 90 degrees. And it points the opposite way as V when the angle is. So that really tells us all we need to know, right? We know the magnitude, you know the direction, you should know the vector. Okay? Right. So after we have these two things, we can write the whole vector as just its direction times its magnitude, right? And that should be... So we're going to have this. Okay. Now, this simplifies because when theta is less than 90 degrees, the cosine is positive. When theta is greater than 90 degrees, the cosine is negative. So this is actually just going to be u cosine theta, no absolute value by there anymore, times the direction of V. And we can do better, right? But how do we actually compute this? If I just gave you U and V as column vectors. So remember the cosine, we defined it in terms of dot product, right? So we have, here's our cosine. Cosine of the angle between u and v is u dot v over magnitude of u, magnitude of v. And then the direction of v is just V multiplied by the reciprocal of its magnitude.
Okay.
So if you unpack all the definitions lurking in this notation, what you actually get is a whole bunch of scalars multiplied together and then finally multiplied by an actual vector. And the magnitudes of U will cancel out. You have magnitude of V squared down here. So A is just U dot V over squared magnitude of V times V. And so it is indeed a multiple of V. Right? So it's parallel or anti-parallel to V. You could also write it as U dot V over V dot V, because the magnitude is the square root of the dot product of the vector of itself. So this is some number. Take one dot product and another dot product, you divide them, you get a number, multiply it by the vector. Okay. So one is done. What about two? Okay, so we have to subtract. Okay. And so these formulas can be our official definitions for the projection and the orthogonal projection. So this is a way of breaking up any vector into two parts, one that goes along a given line and another part that is perpendicular to that given line. Here's a nice example. Let's say I have V is something very nice. It is a nice horizontal vector. Okay. And U is maybe not as nice, maybe it's so. Okay? But you can really sketch these, right? So these things are just two dimensions here. So, okay, here's V. And along the y-axis. Points way up here. So if this is a reasonable way of cutting up U into parallel part or anti-parallel part and perpendicular part, down here, this had better be the projection, right? That's the part that's along the line through V. And then this part up here had better be the perpendicular part. And so the projection is clearly 2 to the right and no vertical part. And the orthogonal projection is clearly without horizontal part, and it has 7 as its vertical part. If it's not that way, then we've done something very wrong. Okay, well, let's see if the formula actually works here. Let's see what we get. Okay, so projection first. Okay? Okay, so 27.30 over 30.30 times 30. Okay? So 2 times 3 is 6, 7 times 0 is 0. 3 times 3 is 9, 0 times 0 is 0. Once you have the projection, you've done all the hard work, right? You don't need to use the formula again because you've already figured out it's take away the projection. So what do you got? So it's going to be U is 27, and we're subtracting the projection, which is 0. Yeah. Use for emphasis. If you've already computed the projection, you don't need to compute it again. Questions or comments? Oh. Okay. Okay, so we were talking about perpendicular stuff towards the end of the last class. I was talking about how the row space is orthogonal to the kernel, right? Remember, what is the row space? Here, let's make up a matrix. Okay. How about M is 3? This matrix. I chose the first two rows basically at random, and I decided to purposefully make the third row just the second row minus the first row. So this should have rank 2, okay? Because the first two rows should not be parallel, but the third row lies in the plane, so to speak, of the second two rows. Okay. Set of all products of the form A times vector X, where X in this case has to have 5, right? Which is the same as saying it's the span of the columns. Because when you multiply by a vector of dimension 5, what are you doing with the matrix? You're taking the first column times times the first entry in your x vector there, then the second column times the second entry all the way until you get to the last column times the fifth entry, right? Again, this is all the possible combinations of the 5 columns that you could possibly come up with. Right? Now, the row space is the column space of the transpose. So that is the span of the three rows turned into columns, right? In abbreviated notation, I did this. Of course, the most abbreviated notation is just row A. Right? Some people might even write, just RA, right? If they really want to save space. I like to write that. the actual road thing. So that's just a side remark. Okay. Now, the kernel of things in five-dimensional space. Now, one way you can think about it, right, is in terms of the columns, right? Where 2, 3, 1 times x1 plus 7, 6, negative 1 times x2 plus 5, 0, negative 5 times x3 plus 8, 8, 0 times x4, finally plus 4, 6, 2 times x5 adds up to 0, 0, 0. But in terms of dot products, right, this, right, you get a different way of thinking about it. If you read off the equations row by row, it's 2 times x1 plus 7 times x2 plus 5 times x3 plus 8 times x4 plus 4 times. And yet, in this example, there's three equations. And you're looking at these equations, and they're all dot products, right? This is a dot product of this vector here with x, right? So the kernel is really just the vectors that are orthogonal with all the rows. Okay. So it's perpendicular to, that's a less fancy word than orthogonal. It's perpendicular to 2, 7, 5, 8, 4, right? That's the first equation here. 2, 7, 5, 8, 4, fill in the dot, dot, dot right there. It's also perpendicular to 3, 6, 0, 8, 6. And it's also perpendicular to 1, negative 1, negative 5, 0, 2. That's my third equation there. Right. See, this is just two different ways of writing the same system of three equations. In this version, I focus on the columns. In this version, I focus on the rows. Now, so we're saying here that we're perpendicular to all three vectors here. And if you're perpendicular to, if you're perpendicular to these three, you're also perpendicular to all their linear combinations, right? Now, the row space is the span of those three things, right? So, for example, if X is in that kernel, and then I have something else, let's call it Y, that's in the row space of A. Say y is equal to some number c1 times, I'll make up names for them. Think of this as the first row, then the second row, then the third row. So of course I had to turn them into column vectors, what we're always working with. I had to turn the rows sideways, but And what happens here? X dot y is, well, we just distribute through c1x dot r1 plus c2x dot r2 plus c3x dot r3. And these are all zero. So skip zero. So anything in the row space, not just the original rows, but any linear combination of the rows, right, is perpendicular to x.
Right. If x is in the kernel. So everything in the kernel is perpendicular to everything in the row space. You might ask, well, is there anything else perpendicular to everything in the row space? And the answer is no. By the fundamental theorem of linear algebra, informally, there just isn't enough room for there to be anything else. The rank of this matrix is going to be 2, so the row space will be 2-dimensional, and then the kernel will be 5 minus 2, that is 3-dimensional. And we're in 5-dimensional space here, so there's you got this 3-dimensional space perpendicular to this 2-dimensional space. There isn't room for anything else to be perpendicular to the 3-dimensional space, right? Other than the 2-dimensional space we already got. That's the short version of it.
I just heard you said 5-dimensional space.
Yeah, see? Look at all these column vectors I wrote. They're all 5 tall. Right? The row space and the kernel of this matrix are both subspaces of R5.
Yes, but isn't there like only x, y, and c dimensions?
Well, this is abstract, right?
Oh.
Let's think about yourself. You have a height, you have a weight, you have an age, you have an income, you have, what else do you got?
My health?
Oh, you. Well, I mentioned 4 variables already, didn't I? Height, weight, age, and income. And those are 4 numerical variables. So I think you're at least 4-dimensional. Right? I need at least 4 numbers to describe you. Right?
Okay, right? So I would just stay in the physical dimensions.
Yeah, well, you gotta get beyond physical interpretations.
Okay.
Yeah. On Monday we're going to go to a 20-point data set, so we're going to need to go 20-dimensional.
I heard that next Monday is going to be on Wednesday's exam.
Only days 1 through 8.
Oh, the whole month, okay. Yeah.
Now, we need more time to process this stuff before we do a test. Some of this stuff here. And erase some other stuff. Subspace, we'll call it W, of say n-dimensional Euclidean space, we define this thing. Some people want to abbreviate this symbol. I mean, they want an audible word for it, so it stands for perpendicular. So they say perp. So they'd say W perp is the orthogonal complement of W. Which is the set of everything in Rn that is perpendicular to everything in W. In
in set builder notation, this would say it's the set of all x in Rn, so n tall column vectors, where for all things in W, x is perpendicular to and if you ever, how do you actually find one of these given W, right? Well, there's the fundamental theorem of linear algebra gives us these two key facts, because of the way the dimensions add up. So if I give you W in the form of a solution set, like a kernel, right, then its orthogonal complement will just be the row space. Conversely, if I give you W as the span of some set, then you could think of that set as a bunch of rows, and then the span would be the row space, and the orthogonal complement would therefore be the kernel. Okay? So whether I give you a vector space as a subspace or as a span, you can figure out all you want to know about the orthogonal complement. And you'll notice here that what happens if you take the orthogonal complement of the orthogonal complement, right? Well, you get back to where you started. Now, every vector subspace of Rn can actually be expressed in the form of, a kernel of some matrix and the row space of some other matrix. So this is actually general. For any subspace, the orthogonal complement of the orthogonal complement is just the original subspace.
Let's see. Now, a very simple geometric example of this would be something you can see in three dimensions, say. How about W is the z-axis, okay? Anything of the form 0, 0, z. You could think of this in two ways. You could think of it as a span, right? Say all the multiples of 0, 0, 1. You could also think of it as a kernel, right? You could think of it as the set of all x, y, z, where now it's a solution of two equations, x is 0 and y is 0, okay? In terms of row spaces, this would just be the row space of this matrix, and it would be the kernel of this matrix. So how do I write this equation? Okay, so think of it as I need an x, y, and a z column. Okay, so my x column, for the first row, I'm going to have the first equation. So to say x equals 0, I'm going to have 1 times x equals 0. 1 times x plus no y's plus no z's equals 0. And then for the second equation, I'm going to have no x's plus 1 y plus no z's equals 0. So you've got your z-axis, right? It's pointing straight up from the origin, and of course continuing downward,
What are the arrows from the origin orthogonal to it? They're all the arrows that point along the xy plane. So geometrically, you know that the orthogonal complement of W has to be the xy plane. Okay? So everything of the form xy is 0. So, and since the row space is orthogonal to the kernel for any given matrix, this had better be also then the orthogonal complement of this one, so it should be the kernel of this one, and it should be the row space of this one. Let's see. What is the kernel of this thing?
You have a question? Let me know if I made a typo or something.
All right, so what are we looking at here? We want to say that 0x's times 0x's plus 0y's plus 0 or plus 1z has to add up to 0, right? On the, for the kernel, you're always, this is the left side of the equation for each row, and the right side is always 0. And, well, yeah, that looks... See, x and y are free here. They can be whatever I want, right? But z has to be 0. So that's exactly what, geometrically, I thought W perp should be. Here's the row space of the other matrix. Right? So that's the same as the column space of its transpose. So turn this row here into a column. Turn the second row into the second column. And so this is going to be the span of the columns. So there's two vectors there. 1, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0. Okay, so we're looking at all the linear combinations. So all any number times the first one plus any number times the second one. So I'll call those numbers suggestively x and y. Okay. Easy to see what that is, right? X times 1 is x, x times 0 is 0, x times 0 is 0. So you'll have x 0, 0 plus 0, y 0, add them up, you'll have x plus 0, 0 plus y, 0 plus 0. So you'll get x, y, 0. So that's exactly what we wanted. The same. Check mark. So, as we first started talking about on day 8, if you take a matrix and if necessary put in reduced row echelon form, You can learn all about its row space and column space and kernel, right? We even talked about how to find bases for these, Now I'm finally going to use the A. Any questions or comments about this stuff before I raise it? Maybe I'll add one little picture, right? Here's the XY plane. Here's the Z axis. Time for the thing that was going to use the compass. Time for the thing that's going to use all the meter sticks.
Do you need help with the meter sticks?
I will, but not just yet. I'm getting to it. Okay. Let's see. Could you find the reduced row echelon form of this for me, though? We're going to use that to get a basis for a row operations will preserve row space and kernel space. And once you have it in reduced row echelon form, it's easy as pie to get the basis for the row space. Not as easy as pie, but relatively easy compared to just A to get a basis for the kernel. Thank you, sir.
what is this going to buy us? All right, so, okay, so which columns are the pivot columns?
First two.
Which rows are the echelon rows?
The first two.
Okay, so this tells us, for example, we're not after the column space today, but this would tell us that the column space is spanned by the first two columns of A. But we're after the kernel and the row space. Okay, so these two rows of B, right, form a basis for the row space of B, and hence also for the row space of A. In this case, as I predicted, it's rank 2, right? Two echelon rows, two pivots, and so the row space is two-dimensional. Right? So you've got to turn it into a column, right? But it's just going to be the echelon rows. This one's a little trickier to read off from B, but basically these columns tell you what it is. You have to augment it essentially with part of an I part. Imagine continuing these ones down a diagonal, right? This is what you get. Okay. So here we are in five-dimensional space, two-dimensional subspace, and its orthogonal complement on some other three-dimensional subspace. Now, what we can talk about now is, for example, if I had a vector some vector v, say, and I had this problem that v, say I wanted something in the row space of A, right, which is two-dimensional, right? Okay. Now, maybe, a little short here, v is not in A, but I'd like to get the closest thing, okay? And the closest thing would be kind of like its shadow, right? What I would like to have is an analog of projection and orthogonal projection. Right? This is exactly what you need to do linear regression. If you want to fit a line to a curve, a line is a multiple. Right? It's A. It's maybe you think of it as mx plus b or a plus bx, whatever. Right? It's a multiple of 1. It's like all your data points are 1, and then a multiple of x, where your data points are just the input value. Right? So the space of all the lines is a two-dimensional space, but maybe you have 5 data points, so you're in five-dimensional space. So your data isn't quite in the two-dimensional space where the data is perfectly linear. It's a little bit off. You'd like to get the closest thing, right? I want to make... What I'd like to do is I'd like to have theta here, that angle, be as small as possible. And I'd also like to have this distance d be as small as possible. Right? And so there actually is something that does that. Okay, let's call the row space W. So that's two-dimensional. So there actually is something Just like you can project onto a vector, you can project onto a subspace. Okay. I'm going to call this U, if you forgive me for changing. So there is a projection that does exactly what you want. So I would like to be able to do that. All right. So the problem we run into is when you're projecting onto a subspace that's two-dimensional or higher, you want to subtract out the parts that are, say, parallel to one direction, the parts parallel to another direction. But you can get kind of stuck in a loop, so to speak.
Let's see. I need to take pictures before I erase stuff over here.
So the problem here is these two vectors are not orthogonal. If you take their dot products, you do not get zero. Okay? And that leads to some difficulties. And so we're going to fix those by changing this basis to an orthogonal basis, where all the vectors are perpendicular to each other. Now of this space W and it's just spanned by this. Okay. And I'm going to talk, the idea is now I want to somehow project onto W in some sense. Okay. Now I'll show you kind of the problem with this scenario. Okay, so now you want to hold your so we'll have some vectors that are not orthogonal. Okay, so you can hold them kind of like this. Alright. And okay, so we have I've got some other vector that's, out here or something, okay? And wherever it is, maybe it's here. So maybe I've got it going out to here, okay? So I want to get the part of it that is right about here, okay? So, and then I want to take that part away and see what I have left over, right? So what, after I take away this arrow, what I have left over would be this arrow, okay, going to here. And now, maybe I'd like to look at the part of this arrow that is along this part, so I'd end up taking something away from, I guess, so I'm going perpendicular, kind of about there, right? And so now my arrow's going to kind of, ooh, it's going to kind of point along here, okay? All right, but then I'd end up having to take away a piece from here. It would be shorter than before, but I still have to take more away. And then I'm going to end up having to take away another piece from here, and then another piece from here, and from here, and from here. And it's going to go on forever. It'll converge as a geometric series, but it's not very convenient for it to have to go on forever like that. Okay? What you want is for them to be orthogonal, because then if they're orthogonal, you can say, like, if they're like this and I have mine coming out here, what I can do is first I can grab the part that is goes along there, and then the leftover will be like this, and then I grab the part that's vertical, and then my leftover is like that. So the leftover is now perpendicular to both. Okay. So this is not an orthogonal basis of W, but it is a basis. Okay. So we're going to make it orthogonal. Okay. I'll call this one V1, and I'll call this one V2. Okay. So my orthogonal basis is going, I'll just call them W1 and W2. Right? The dimension's not going to change, obviously. Okay, still two-dimensional. I can just use the first one as is. And then for the other one, I just need to cut out the part that's parallel to W1, right? So I just take the orthogonal projection to W1 of V2, right? I need to use a part of V2, but not all of it. I just want the part that is perpendicular to what I've already chosen, right? Okay, that'll fix it. Right? Maybe it was like this, V1, V2, but then after I do this, then here's W2, all fixed. Nice right angle. Yeah. That's all there is to it. Okay. If it was 3D, you have to do slightly more work. Okay. But first, let me just tell you how it goes in 2D here. We can come back to, three and higher dimensions next time. Running low on time here. Okay? So now, given our orthogonal basis, I guess this is where we started, and we improved it. Now we're in business. Now the projection onto W of some other vector U is just going to be the projections onto the two pieces added together. So you can think of it as W1 is like the x-axis, and W2 is like the y-axis. And so if you want to project something down to the xy plane, you take the horizontal part and the vertical part. And then, of course, you can define an orthogonal projection by just taking the vector you started with and taking away the projection. So I could have now, say, something, try and illustrate. Here's some U. Okay, so projects down somewhere. This. So. Attempt to make parallel lines. Okay. So what's going on here is that I would have
these markers.
Something like this. Here's the projection onto W1. Here's the projection onto W2. It's hard because I'm trying to draw 3D perspective to get it right. Okay, add those two projections together. You have the projection onto the whole subspace capital W. And then, of course, there's another part, the leftover part of U, which is at a right angle with W. And that is your orthogonal projection onto subspace W. And I can't draw the picture for what it looks like to project onto a three-dimensional subspace. But I can sort of draw a picture for what it looks like to project onto a two-dimensional subspace. Okay, so this is homework 11. For a rank 2 4x4 matrix of your choice, so if you're not sure how to make it rank 2, just make two of the rows all zeros and the other two rows random. That'll be rank 2. Right? Or equivalently, make two of the columns random and the other two columns all zeros. Right? Then with very high probability, you've got something rank 2. Okay. If you want to get fancy, then you can start, taking linear combinations of the two rows or two columns that are random to fill in the other columns so they're not just all zeros. But in either case. Okay. I want you to find bases for the kernel. So we're going to call the matrix A and the row space, and find an orthogonal base for the row space. And I guess that's homework A. There's one other homework. Find a base for W perpendicular where W is the span of 1, 2, 3, 4 and 1, 0, 0, 0. Okay. Any questions or comments? Yes.
What does it do?
Not for a while. The precise answer is the Monday after spring break, so you might want to start early.
Yeah.